Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're in a More Like Radio live page listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room? It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. It's right there on the right, stupid.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio. The Nerd Hour.
Tattoos and touchdowns.
Best selling show.
You're listening to the shoot.
Trust us, we're hot.
Masters of none.
360 on 420.
Welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast.
The Conti and Kenny Show.
OSW Review.
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Alcohol by volume.
My time now.
It's time for Dutch and Royce.
No! Welcome to Rage Quit Radio.
Get ready for Hippo Juice.
Time for the Rage.
The Elvis and Albert Show.
The Cousin Joe Show.
Radio Meltdown.
It's High Society Radio.
It's all about me with Halls and Rorschach.
Shy kids.
Orange Room.
Warlock Radio!
Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zunes, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Obviously, I was... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to explain it, but...
No, explain radio to Ashley.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Would you mind taking Colin for a walk about 8?
Huh? That's 2,000 hours. Oh, yeah.
Now here's your host, that's Ashley, and this is...
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to Antisocial Gamer Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. It is Tuesday night. It is 9 o'clock. So if you listen to the download, you'll miss the live show, but thank you for listening to the download. If you want to listen to the live show, we go 9 o'clock UK time, which is 4 p.m. Eastern. We have a nice new banner on the Facebook page. Thank you, Marie, for doing that for us. I do appreciate it. I'll give you a nice big hug when I see you in a few months. So if you do want to interact with us, you want to listen to the show, get in touch, you can email the show. It's antisocialgamerradio@yahoo.co.uk. So that's the only reason Yahoo's going these days, because I've got my email address for the show. Also, if you want to get in touch with us on the old Facebook group, we do post a lot of stuff in there, topics, articles, a whole bunch of stuff. I saw some good stuff today I was going to post in there, and I think Matty's been posting some funny memes that I've seen that's quite funny from Mortal Kombat. Go to facebook.com/groups/MLRGamerLobby. Also, you can like the show's Facebook page, up to 179, so that's pretty cool. Nearly 2 years, it's not bad. facebook.com/antisocialgamerradio. I'd love to get that up to 200 by Christmas. That would be really good. Also, you can follow us on Twitter, @MLRGamerRadio. You follow me and I'll follow you back. Sort of the way I like to do things. But yeah, so it's been a good week for gaming. I mean, literally, it's October now, and it's so cold outside in London. It's literally, I'm freezing my arse. I've got the heating on. I'm sitting here barefoot. But yeah, it's getting cold, and the nights are literally here. It's pitch black outside. Games are coming. I mean, the Evil Within's out, I think, this week, next week. I was looking at my Amazon wish list. I've got, Far Cry 4 coming. I've got Assassin's Creed. There's Dragon Age on my list as well that I want to pick up as soon as, money's sorted itself out. Pokemon's out at the end of November. So much stuff to come. And literally, I say, because the winter nights are here. It's cold. It's horrible. Do yourself a favour. Stay indoors. Listen to me. And play some computer games. That's all I'm asking from you. Otherwise, as well, I am asking. Go on iTunes, search for More Like Radio. Go on there, give us a 5-star review. I think that's the minimum you can give us. Go and give us a 5. If you can give us a 6, that'd be great. But leave us a review. Send me a message, email me. Tell me that you reviewed the show, and I'll read your review out on air, whether it's good or bad or, the ugly one. So welcome to the show, ladies and gents. It is Tuesday night, as usual, with me, Ashley. The wheels are steel. No, that's fine. Some guy at work thinks I'm a DJ. No, I'm a talk show host. Sort of. Yes, not playing too much because literally, we're at that stage now where there's pretty much nothing to play for the next month, and then we're going to get hit pretty hard with, because we've got the Grand Theft Auto coming out. So, as I said, Dragon Age, we have, the expansion for Destiny's out at Christmas. So much good stuff to play. It's just, we've just got to hold on that little bit longer and until we can basically play everything and have fun. I mean, it's October 7th now. Fuck it, soon be Christmas and soon be the Game of the Year show, which basically means you lot have got about 2 months to think about all the stuff you've been playing this past year, make up a list of what you want, and because literally when I do the Game of the Year show, it's probably like the last show before the new year anyway. I want to know what the best thing you've been playing this year. Several things, tell me what you've been playing, what you think is good. I would love to know. I'm dying to know what you've been playing. That's coming 2 months down the line. It's about, 8-9 shows away, something like that. Tell me what you've been playing, because I'd really want to know what you think the best game that you've been playing this year. And as I said, we've still got stuff to come with, Dragon Age, Assassin's Creed, which is getting good reviews. We've got Alien Isolation out now, which is getting mixed, mediocre, good reviews. I have no interest in it. I said this last week, and I'm looking at, I watched a review of it, and it got like a 7.4 from, I think, Game Trailers or something, which is a good score. It's a very good score. But it's just, it just seems like, it just seems like a movie tie-in game, because yes, it is a movie tie-in game. I know the lads over at Rage Quit Radio tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern. I think it is. Yeah, before Hippo Juice, they're going to be talking about this. It just seems like what, 30 years too late? Hang on, how old am I? 35 years too late for a Aliens game where it's basically pretty much the first movie, but, I don't know. I like Aliens. I like the third movie, which people don't like. The fourth one's a bit shit. I just no interest in buying this game whatsoever when there's so much other good stuff coming out that I'd rather spend my money on. It's getting good to mixed reviews, and if you want to buy it, pick it up. If you don't, then don't really. Vote with your wallet. I have been playing Destiny as I have been playing for the past month now. Tons of more stuff going on. I'm almost at rank 3 on for the New Monarchy faction. I need about 900 more points, which is about 90 games of multiplayer if I lose. I think, hang on, is that correct? Something like that, 40, 50, yeah. Something like 50 games of losing multiplayer. And I've done, we got the update today, so there's you can't quick scope, which is a bastard, because I don't think I'm good at quick scoping. But I have been doing very well with my sniping, even though this morning I couldn't snipe for the fucking life of me. We got a new fix, and I sort of headshotted two people within about 2 seconds of each other, and got the marksman achievement for two headshots and not achievement, little flag thing that popped up in multiplayer, which is fun. And I say, because they updated it, so basically all your Crucible marks and your Vanguard marks, you could start again getting a new fresh 100 marks, which is good, because I had 50 yesterday, and then it updated it this morning, because basically I need another 100 to get the gun I want. I was just looking at something. I need another 100 to get the gun I want. Plus, I need to get that 900 points to get rank 3 for New Monarchy. And then I can sort of change my banner and do stuff for other factions to get points for them. And I mean, because literally, I mean, there's like, I'm sort of planning out my character. I was looking at stuff today. I was like, okay, I've got the Future Worlds boots for the, and I need the New Monarchy's gauntlets. And I need that chess piece and this, and, you know, just sort of looking at bits and pieces. And it's just, just sort of planning out how my character's going to be for the next. Well, I don't know. Considering that I need to get more strange coins so that when Zero the Trader turns up, I can buy some gold, some exotic gear from him. Speaking of exotic gear, that bounty I did last week. I fucking got rid of it. That was for a shotgun. I didn't realise that you could choose. I mean, it gives you the option to choose, but I didn't know what I was choosing until I looked it up, because I deleted it and got another exotic bounty. And it was like, sort of, because I mean, there's not exotic bounties for every weapon. Pulse rifle, scout rifle, fusion rifle, machine gun, heavy machine gun, assault, that sort of stuff. There's only for a few at the moment. So I'm guessing later on they're going to patch in more exotic bounties, or if you've got to get all the exotic bounties to unlock further ones. I don't know, because literally, I mean, from all the Destiny podcasts that I've been listening to, there's a whole bunch of hidden stuff hanging around, hidden areas and bits and pieces, and, lots of stuff going, because, I mean, even though the game's been out for a month, there's still stuff that's being unlocked that, Bungie have hidden from us, which is good, to be honest. I did get another exotic bounty, and I actually sat down, did the old Google, and had a look at, what I could choose, and none of the stuff was actually interesting to me. There was a hand cannon, which I don't use the hand cannon because I'm a Titan, not a hunter. I think the Warlocks use that as well. I sort of went for the heavy weapon, the heavy machine gun. Super Good Advice, it's called. And I did that, and I was very lucky with that. It's very, very simple. Basically. Whole thing with it was go to Mars, open up loot chest until you find this item, and then come back to the gunsmith, speak to him, get this part from Zero the Vendor. And this was all done last Thursday. I mean, I had to go to Mars to find, open up loot chest, and lucky enough, very first chest I opened up, I found what I was looking for, which is great. Went back to the gunsmith, he said, blah, 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 go and see Zero. Waited a day until he turned up, bought the item I needed, and then it sort of go back to the gunsmith, and he said, with your heavy machine gun, you'll get 500 kills or something like that, 500 points, it's like one for a chest shot and 3 for headshots. So basically, I sort of went to the gunsmith and stocked up on the old special, the heavy weapon ammo, and then just sort of went to town on the Cosmodrome, basically got the 500, went back to the gunsmith, and he gave me the Super Good Advice weapon, which is amazing. It's got a massive fucking recoil on it. I've only just started upgrading bits and pieces. I've barely scratched the surface with it, but it's a lovely gun. It's sort of just trying to upgrade all the weapons these days. It's so tricky trying to get the items. Really, I mean, I got a lucky enough this morning. I did a multiplayer match and I got a legendary. I can't remember. It was a legendary pulse rifle. Yes, that's what it was. Fusion rifle. It was one of the rifles that I don't use. So I'm like, it's not going to be much of a loss if I get rid of this. Oh, I discarded it. I broke it down to pieces, and I got the. What did I get? I got 3 Ascendant Energy, which is a pain in the ass because I was after Ascendant Shards. Even though Ascendant Energy is very good and will come in very useful to me later, I would have liked those, because I think I'm 2 shards away, 2 or 3 shards away from fully upgrading my boots. But once I've got that, I can work on other bits. I mean, literally, I'm going around the planets and collecting collecting all the spin metal. I mean, finding the spin metal and the helium coils are great because you can see them. But I mean, the only thing I have a problem with seeing is the on Mars, the rocks, the iron stuff, because it's literally, it could be any damn rock because it's all the same looking. But it is a lot of fun doing what I'm doing at the moment, trying to upgrade my character to get to higher and higher levels. I mean, literally with the armor that I've got, because I've got a whole bunch of legendary armor, because I didn't really legendary armor that I didn't think about what I should have put my crucible points into. I could have sort of thought it out better. I've got stuff that I could literally upgrade now and probably get me to level 27, 28 if I wanted to. But I'm like, I need the better stuff. I mean, I need to get my new Monarchy Gauntlets, which probably won't be till next week, and sort of use them and upgrade them and get them higher. I mean, I've got a chess piece that I'm thinking about buying from the Vanguard, so I've got to get my Vanguard rank up to level 2. I mean, it's only like a quarter of the way through to level 1. So basically, I've got that to do. I mean, it's a whole bunch of stuff, which... I'm in no hurry, but I just want, you know, to get higher and higher and higher, so that way I can do the higher raids and get the better items. I mean, several matches I've done with the Crucible recently, today I'm talking about, done the matches, and none of us on the list that I've seen have got items like rewards. I'm like, well, that's a bit of a bastard. But lucky enough, I did get that legendary weapon, which I did break down for the items. But yeah, it's all really good. I mean, just sort of thinking about it now, there will be a stage when I do have all the legendary gear that I do want, and I'll still be getting Crucible Marks and stuff like that, and I can buy, you know, legendary gear just for the fun of it, because I don't need anything else, and I will be using that to break down to help upgrade the equipment that I've got. So, you know, about 4 or 5 months down the line, if I'm still playing Destiny, I should be still playing Destiny, everyone should be still playing Destiny, but I'll have, you know, fully upgraded gear. And I mean, I was sort of wondering about, I mean, because they got, you know, the Iron Banner's out now because the Queen's stuff ended, which I didn't bother taking any part in, even though I did some of the bounties for her to try and get the level up, which I think I'm nearly at rank 1, I think. I don't know. But I mean, you've got the Iron Banner stuff now, which I have no interest in doing, mainly because the bounties look really hard and stupid. But yeah, it's sort of, you know, they take about, it's sort of saying, it's one of the articles I've got, I'll read later, but it's like about, how was it, like removing the limiter, because I think with it, all the multiplayer stuff, they limit on how good your armor is and stuff, because it doesn't reflect how it acts in-game to the fact, in the main game, to the multiplayer that's different. But I don't know, I've got the article later, I'll read that to you. But yeah, I am having tons of fun playing Destiny, still got more to do, but I mean, I am looking forward to the day that, you know... Everyone's walking around with level 30 and they've all got like exotic armor and fully decked out weapons. And yeah, I mean, because you don't, that's what makes me wonder. I'm just thinking now, could you get to level 30 with your, could you get to level 30 with your gear and, you know, partially upgraded? But what happens when you get to level, you know, when it's fully upgraded? I mean, considering the level 30 is a max you can go, have they, you know, have they thought about you know, pushing it further with the level cap increase? I mean, when we do get a level cap increase, will the fully upgraded, if everyone's got fully exotic armor with, you know, fully upgradable, will that sort of, you know, push it up a few points if they sort of work it out and balance it that way? I don't know. I'd like to think so. So, you know, when you do get to wherever as you go, I mean, I think, when you get to exotic stuff, I mean, there's no higher that you can go. But I know I'm sort of being sceptical and think about this stuff, but I mean, hopefully they've thought about this. I mean, they bloody build better. But I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens when, you know, that all happens. But yeah, so lots of Destiny. Just having tons of fun, you know, just trying to get my marks. Because I think I'm up to 20 so far, and I've only, you know, we got the new update today. But it's literally sort of doing bounties, just trying to get to rank 3. What I do want to know is if I can once I've got to rank 3 with the new Monarchy, if I can get rid of their banner to free up some space, even though there's no real need to get rid of it. Just sort of hoping if I do this, you know, discard it, it'll probably give me some items or something. But yeah, I mean, I've got, like, you know, the New Order to do, not New Order, the Dead Orbit and the Future Worlds to get to rank 3. as well as just usual Vanguard and Crucible stuff. Probably work on the Crucible stuff next, I think, to be honest. Even though, you know, there's some weapons that I do want to get from certain places. I mean, I'm happy with the heavy machine gun that I have because it's exotic. But yeah, you know, I'm after a new rocket launcher, which I can get from the Vanguard thing, Vanguard ranks, I think. But yeah, it's so much to do and, you know, so much time to spend. I mean, the game's going to be out for like 10 years, so there's no real rush, really. But yeah, other stuff, Pokemon, usual thing. I'm so close to finishing my get to five, all Pokemon up to five. I mean, I'm not sure what, but I think what's four or five maybe to do. And the rest I need sort of hidden ability ones, which I'm probably going to hold off until we get the Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire versions. Because hopefully there'll be horde battles there, because, I mean, Sharpedo's going to be a mega. So hopefully there'll be horde battles with Carvana. And, you know, Torkoal I need. It's basically all the Pokemon that I need for hidden abilities are the Gen 3. So I'm hoping that there'll be some sort of more focus with Gen 3 hidden ability Pokemon in the Friend Safari, and just other horde battles would be nice. So maybe just hold off. I'll do what I can with what I've got. And then, because I do want to go through my copy of X again to get a Legendary Zapdos, Legendary Articuno. And the fact that, you know, the game doesn't come out for nearly 2 months, I can hopefully knock that out pretty quick. Cause, I mean, I plan on taking a week off work late November, possibly. Early December, something like that. Just sort of knock out a quick, you know, once around the game, twice around the game, hopefully. I'm really hoping that I can, what do you call it? I can, sorry, one sec. Yeah, I'm really hoping that... I can, you know, transfer all my Pokemon over to, you know, Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. So that way I can sell my X and Y versions. And, you know, just keep all the bits and pieces that I have. But we'll wait and see. I mean, we're still a couple of months away, but we'll see. I mean, there's no topic for this week's show. But I have a whole load of news articles. And I've got a whole bunch of sort of other articles in between that are sort of interest me and I'd like to talk about for a little bit. And, you know, some stuff that I've been sitting on for a while. Yeah, this is from the Xbox Official Magazine. It's about sort of sex in games, sort of. From BioWare. It says, sex won't be the end goal of relationships in Dragon Age. I mean, I'm looking forward to Dragon Age. I know several other people are. And we've seen some character trailer, character customization. A whole bunch of good stuff. And, you know, it's going to be good. And this thing, because, I mean, with the BioWare games, they're known for having the sex in games, and I'll talk about that. I'll just read this article first and see how it goes, and then I'll add my two cents to it. Let's instead try and reach for something that's like genuine affection. BioWare's Mike Laylor recently spoke to IGN about the games that influence the studio on what kind of relationship players could form with NPCs in Dragon Age Inquisition, and confirmed that the end goal of those relationships will no longer be sex, necessarily. The most romantic moment in a video game that I've ever seen is when Jackie visits his girlfriend in the apartment in the darkness, Laylor said. She baked me a cake, she's moved in, you watch possibly the entire, entirety of To Kill a Mockingbird as she passes out on your lap because she's tired and snuggly. That is amazing. That scene is close to as video games come to the first 10 minutes of Up. Both scenes share the same purpose of making the audience think, I really care about this character. This different way of representing relationships in-game made the team set new goals for relationships in Dragon Age Inquisition. Laidlaw continues, let's not have gifts that buy affection. Let's not have sex be the end goal. Let's instead try and reach something that's genuine affection and let you go and say hello. Go up and say, hey, you, we're going to kiss now, and let players enjoy that and feel like, yeah, that's the real thing. It's a weird thing with games. It's like, because, I mean, there's so many different aspects and ways I can come across at this. Because, I mean, with the BioWare, I mean, what got me into playing Mass Effect is like, wow, you can have lesbians. Nice. But yeah, I mean, that sort of, you know, my, you know, hormones raged at that moment. But yeah, I mean, it's something, the whole relationships in games, it's sort of, it's something that's not really been put into that depth in with much depth, because I mean I've played for, I mean I'm, I say as you know I'm a very romantic person, and I like a good romance part in games and story, and you know I do go for that sort of love feely touchy stuff aspect in games when I play them. I mean you know I mean I think about games like Fahrenheit, which is that was the, I can't remember what the name was, it Omega Code, Orange Code. It was the ones who did the that they did Heavy Rain. It was before Heavy Rain. It was called Fahrenheit over here, but it was called something else. It was a great big sort of Matrix style Dragon Ball Z battle right at the end of the game. It's basically you were looking for this child. I can't remember what the hell it was called, but I mean there was a sort of relationship in that. Here we go, Fahrenheit. Just looking it up now. Orange. Was it Omega? God, I'm just trying to do this on the fly here. Here we go. Yeah. Indigo Prophecy. There we go. Yeah. Known as Fahrenheit over here, but in America it was Indigo Prophecy. Yeah, I mean, there was the main character in that you played as. That's the thing. It's when it comes to relationships, I mean, it's more than just. In games, this is I'm talking about. It's more than the whole physical stuff, because it's not based on, because you know the whole, when you're looking at the characters, it's all polygons and you know polygons. It's all, you know, how the character looks and rendering and that sort of stuff. But the way the character is, their personality. I mean, I've talked to various people about Dragon Age, and they've said about certain characters they like because who they are, and Mass Effect as well. Yeah, I mean, as one friend, and she said, you know, she was with Garrus through Mass Effect 2 and 3 with the relationship stuff because of how good of a character. You know, I was the male shepherd, and you know, Garrus was like my best mate. But I mean, she was like the female shepherd, so you know, Garrus was a lover. But yeah, I mean, it's nice that games go in depth like this, because it pleases me. It makes me feel. Have a deeper connection to games that we are getting through the relationships. And so I say, you know, sex doesn't have to be the be-all, end-all for what happens. I mean, because, in fact, this is BioWare. You've seen half the sex stuff that we've all seen, you know, with the, I think, go back to Mass Effect, with the first one, with the Citadel, when you have sex with, not Liara, but it's the one on the Citadel, the blue chick. You know, and basically her hand goes up on the window, that bowl thing, and that, and the awkwardness, because it's the rendering of the graphics and stuff, you can't really see in kiss. It's sort of just pecking awkwardly, you know, it's like fucking, you know, spazzed out ducks or something. But yeah, you get the whole feeling. I mean, with the characters, it all depends on how the characters make you feel when you're playing with them. You know, I mean, they're going for a deeper meaning to the relationship more than just, okay, yep, do this, press that. But thing is, though, right, even when you get to the end, and it depends on the player as well as the actual the character, because it's how we as the players see the characters. It's like, I mean, yeah, I was about Mass Effect stuff. Oh, lesbians are really great. And I never played as a female shepherd, so I never got to see that. But it's like, it all depends on how you see... how you see the relationships going between your characters. I mean, I said to my friend of mine about Mass Effect, it's like, I went with Liara the whole game because, you know, she was my lady. She was, you know, she was a great character, and she was the one that my character Shepard should be with. Yes, I mean, we messed around with Jack and Miranda during several playthroughs, but it was like, yeah, at the end of the day, my main playthrough was with Liara, because she was the one that you were with from the first game. And when we got her in the second, it was, you know, there was still something between you, and then it came back in the third game. But it's nice that games go deeper into this sort of stuff. It's not just, as I say, I mean, playing Destiny, it's not run and gun and shoot. It's run, gun, shoot, and protect the one you love. And it's you know, very nice that games can give us this sort of, you know, sort of touchy-feely... aspect to it. It's not literally, as I say, run, gun, shoot. There's more to it. It's deeper. That's what I say. Games should be deeper these days. I mean, the amount of work that developers are putting into games these days, we should get deeper meaning into the stories, into the relationships, into the characters. And I say this to every developer, publisher, whatever listening to me right now. Take your time on making the games. Make it the best you can be, which basically means you need to fill out the roles of the characters. You need to fill out the roles of the story, Destiny. And you need to, you know, go in depth with it. Go in depth as much as you want, as much as you can. You know, give us an experience. Fulfill us with what you want us to do with the story. But, you know, when it comes to the relationships, you know, let us build relationships with these characters. I mean, as I say, I said about Game of the Year earlier. Last year, my... hang on. Was it Far Cry? No. Sorry. 2 years ago, my first Game of the Year for the show was Far Cry 3. And that was because Jason Brody was a great character. That was one of the main reasons, because of his character. Really good character. And, you know, the relationship you had with your brother and all the crazy people on the islands. You know, it all depends on how... You know, how you play with your characters. Sorry, a bit burpy. But no, I mean, when it comes to the same about this, you know, sex shouldn't be the end goal of any relationship. Some players will see, yep, okay, let's do this, let's make them do this and that, and okay, yep, that's fun. But at the end of the day, I mean, you're not looking to get off with any of the sort of game stuff, because with, say, it's BioWare. I mean, if anyone remembers what the sex stuff was like in Dragon Age, that was the first one I'm talking about. I didn't play the second one. Very bloody awkward and very comedic. But I mean, there's been sex relationship stuff in other games, like with Fahrenheit, you know, Indigo Prophecy. That's the female police officer. She was banging a corpse at the end because he was a zombie, sort of. And then, you know, I think about sort of Metro Redux, Metro Last Light, where you can have sex with that Russian chick, Anna, I think that was what her name is. Yeah, and, you know, she has your son at the end of the game. Spoilers. Yeah, I mean, that was actually a quite tender moment, but it's like you're basically in this medical ward and it's sort of, you know, closed off, and she sort of sees you as a strong character, a strong person. You can talk about Atian in the game for Metro. And, you know, he is a really good, strong character. You know, he's been through a lot of shit, and she was attracted to it. So, you know, basically it's a bit down and dirty with each other. But it has to be more than that. It was a bit weird because literally you're with Anna at the beginning of the game, and then basically it's not till the very end. You're literally nowhere near her because you're lost and searching through tunnels and trying to do bits and pieces. But, yeah, I mean, maybe it's just a moment that she had. When it comes to playing games like RPGs and, you know, single player story driven games, we should have that aspect. I mean, Uncharted. There we go. With the Uncharted games, great storytelling, great characters. I mean, there is no real need with Uncharted. It's like, okay, you've got. Let me just call up the company of the fucking character's name is now. Uncharted. There we go. One sec. Here we go. Yeah. I would say with the... one second. Here we go. Yeah. Elena Fisher. Yeah. With, you know, basically you end up together at the end of, you know, the game and in 2 and in 3. It's like, yeah, there's no real need to actually... let's get a knickers off, jump into bed. It's not like that. It's deeper. It's, I mean, you know, Drake is, you know, Nate is helping her and Sully and, you know, doing what they're supposed to do and protecting people, you know, because, you know, Nate's a hero. But then it's like, you know, with 2, you introduce to Chloe, who's really hot Australian character. But yeah, I mean, you know, Eleanor is, she is Nate's lady. She is the one he wants to be with, and with, you know, Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, it's like, they've got, I think from what I'm seeing, they got married, and their relationship was a bit, you know, rocky, and they split up, but are still married, and, you know, it's nice to have that sort of deeper meaning with the characters, but it all depends on how the story's told, how they want to go in depth with the characters, it's how well it's written. You know, you take some time and you work on this sort of stuff to get what you need from the characters. So, I mean, you know, it's true. Sex shouldn't be your main goal when it comes to relationships in games with characters. It should be getting to know the character, learning the likes, dislikes, how they tick, and then, going further. And I say, because it's a sidestep away from the whole main adventure of what you're doing in games. It's like, Dragon Age, it's, killing the monsters, beating the bad guy, win the game. But you've also got this side aspect to it. It's like, yep, making friends with this character and, going about it like that, really. More softer side, even though, no, not really. But, yeah, it should be like that, to be honest. But, yeah, I'd say, as long as all games learn from this and, there's no need to throw sort of sex willy-nilly into stuff like this. It's just sort of you go, slow with it and you sort of work on it with the characters and how the story you want to told and, stuff like that, really. Let's find another article. Let's have a look what we got here. Let's have a look. Here we go, yeah. This is something I saw from like a couple of weeks ago. Well, a couple of months ago, actually. EA getting better at listening to players, CEO says. Consumers want choice. EA offers it, according to Andrew Wilson. EA Access given Electronic Arts a better way to listen to what its customers want. CEO Andrew Wilson says, what they want is more options. Yeah. It's part of shifting stories. Wow, that guy really looks like the bad guy from Half-Life. It's part of the shifting priorities within the game within the company to try and put the player first. Once again, Wilson told Games Industry International, "One of the things they've been learning as we make the digital transformation is that we don't need to guess what players want anymore." Wilson said, "For the longest time, we've had to guess, and the first opportunity to find out whether you've got it right or not was when you first saw the game on the shelf." I'm going to cut in there just to say, we're playing Destiny. I mean, there's a whole lot of shit going on with Destiny at the moment with Bungie and stuff. And it's like, yeah, Bungie listens to its community. We've had problems with the loot stuff, the fact that the engrams, we get a legendary engram and we end up with like a rare item or, we still can, but we end up with something like the uncommons or a green one. No, they fixed it now so that, you get a legendary, you get a legendary, you get a rare one, you get a rare one. Simple as that. It's easy. You just set up a community team. I don't get to see how it's so hard. And considering this is EA, yes, they haven't been flavor of the month for at least 10, 15 years now, but it's not very hard to sort of listen to the fans, listen to the community. I mean, people are bitching and moaning about stuff. The fact that, the Medal of Honor stuff was really shit and, your sports games are the same shit every year, but, I'm reading. It's just now we're getting better at listening. We haven't always been great listeners, but we're getting better. And what's telling us is is that people want choice. They want to be able to choose what's right for them at a given moment in time. There isn't a one size fits all any longer. Trust me, that's true. We've got to build a core platform, game engines and games that facilitate that. Rather than pushing retail sales, digital purchases or subscriptions like EA Access, Wilson says he's learned in the few years that no solution will fit everyone. We believed that when we launched EA Access that it was great value and gamers for the most part have fed back that it's great value. We're going to continue to put things into the service that make it even better. It will evolve and go for a lot of permutations over time as we listen and learn from players who engage with it. My hope is that when we can deliver that kind of service to millions of players for years to come. EA Chief Operating Officer Peter Moore told CBG selection of free games called The Vault will be permanent and sustainable. But yeah, I mean, I know it's nice that he's listening to what players want, and the fact you're EA. You've been on several bad lists of like the worst company in the world for a couple of years now, and it's not hard for gamers for developers to listen to this stuff. There's hundreds and hundreds of gaming podcasts out there. There's message boards, every damn thing. I mean, emails, community teams, community managers. You just set that up. It's so easy to listen. And, you know, the fact that they are listening makes it even better. Let's find something else. Where was that one? Here we go. Yeah. This is, I think, from Games Radar. Can online gaming exist without constant malicious disruption? As someone who's playing Destiny at the moment, we're having a lot of problems with this sort of stuff. It's really, really annoying. People keep shutting down the servers, the hackers and stuff. It's like, okay, all right, I know you're having a bit of fun, but you're disrupting all of us. And to be honest, it is quite funny the fact that if the addresses of these people did get known, you'd have several million people coming to where you live and kicking the shit out of you. They really would. When people are bored, they do dumb things. Distributed denial of service attacks fall into the category of dumb things. Like other such riveting activities as prank phone calls, joke letter, and ding-dong ditch DDoS attacks require little skill or expert knowledge, just a willingness to mess with someone for some short-lived entertainment. Exactly. Because that whole stuff is just outdated. The DDoSing is what caused the PlayStation Network downtime over the weekend. This is from the end of August. And we had some downtime the other day as well with the PlayStation Network, and Destiny's had some downtime as well. As well as the Battle.net, League of Legends, Path of Exile outages that occurred around the same time. These DDoS attack onslaughts aren't the first concerted efforts of stalling out popular games, and they definitely won't be the last. It begs the question, are these kinds of attacks an inevitable part of the online gaming environment? Oops, I'm going to scroll down past the picture. Let's quickly put some things into perspective. First off, your personal info is not at risk during a DDoS attack. PSN may have been down for a few hours on Sunday, but unlike the hacking fiasco in 2011, no actual data was compromised this time around. So I was good, actually, during that one in 2011 because I had different details on there anyway, different bank cards and everything, so I wasn't affected by any of it. It was just made me laugh. The former implies at least a modicum of cleverness and talent, the ability to bypass walls of security to effect some kind of change. DDoSing is more akin to clogging the toilet. Most people never feel the self. What the fuck? Made up word. Need to do DS anyone. But a Google search is all the education you need to pull it off. A group of people or one person with a bunch of bots work in tandem to overload servers with meaningless information, slowing it to a temporary halt, kind of like hundreds of sheets of toilet paper will eventually clog up some bathroom pipes. The attackers can rejoice in their brief moment of toilet clogging triumph, fully aware that it won't be long before a plumber steps in and restores the system to normal. To some people, those few hours of the toilet being broken are apparently a cause for celebration. DDoSing may be simple to do, but its effects can be pretty significant. In the grand scheme of things, not being able to log into PSN for a few hours is very much a first world problem. And the kind of inconvenience that you'll completely forget about on the other hand, the interrupted service is bad for Tony's business and probably costs hundreds of thousands of dollars in lost sales. Then there are the inexplicable violent attacks, the DDoS and disruption of the extra drive charity events, which might have actually been the work of compassionless demons from the ninth dimension, possessing the bodies of internet users. What can stop DDoSing? By the looks of things, not much. For every countermeasure, there are 20 aimless people devising new methods of attack. The same group that's claiming responsibility for all the attacks also gave itself a nice butt-patting for a fake bomb threat, which, as a bona fide act of terror, is enough to get the attention of the FBI. But the FBI couldn't care less about the temporary blackouts for game services, quite frankly, and that's fine. FBI agents have much bigger, important fish to fry. The argument that these attacks will force companies to improve their security doesn't work. From the sound of it, DDoSing is almost impossible to prevent simply because of how cursory and fruitless the methods are. To try to wipe out DDoSing is like trying to make gnats go extinct. Yes, they're annoying, but they're probably not going to ruin your life either. If you're big enough to talk, you're probably big enough to recover and move on like it never happens. DDoSing attacks will happen, so what are you supposed to do then? Do we just try to ignore it? That deprives DDoSers of getting a rise out of the general public. But then there's no telling whether or not that will deter them. Should we just accept it as an ugly part of the gaming culture? At that point, we're just giving a handful of jerkwads the power to ruin things for everyone. It's a hard question to answer. Maybe we should all unplug our consoles and cling to the physical media like it's 2006. Maybe. But, I mean, for those gamers, when this sort of stuff happens, yes, it's annoying as fuck. Because, I mean, you know, a lot of the games that we have these days are online only. Destiny, SimCity, various others. And yes, I mean, when Destiny goes down, it does piss me the fuck off because it's like, I have stuff to do. I've got to rank up. I've got to get more Vanguard marks. I've got to get more Crucible marks. I need to do this mission several times. I've got to do strikes. I've got to do raids. And it does take us out of it. But lucky enough, I say, when this shit does happen, there is other stuff that I personally can play. You know, I've got my Pokemon playing, just across the room to me. I've got DVD. You know, there's other stuff that you can do while this is happening. But I'd say it does... I do laugh at the childhood mentality of this sort of stuff. I mean, it's very... it's modern era stuff, but it's very outdated to sort of... All right, what we're going to do is we're going to hack into this and we're going to shut down the servers. It's like, okay, why? To get a little bit of a thrill? No, you need to grow the fuck up. And say, you know, people find out where these people live and that shit gets posted on the internet, you're going to have hundreds of people coming to your door, kicking down your front door, and beating the shit out of you because you ruined their game. I mean, you look at how many, violent crimes there are. I mean, you've got all these. I read this article a couple of weeks ago about all the people sending hate mail and tweets and stuff to the publishers and developers and stuff. Do you think what they do if they actually had the actual address of the people who've been shutting down their games? And I'd say League of Legends and Dota and sort of that. Yeah, they. I mean, as much as I hate all that fucking Major League Gaming bullshit, there's thousands or hundreds of thousands, millions of people who like this shit, and they find out where you live because you've been doing this shit. They're going to come with a fucking knife, a gun, and a baseball bat, and they're going to beat the fuck out of you. Fuck, I know I would. But yeah, I say all this sort of stuff, it's old school mentality, just to get a rise out of it. Me, you know, it goes down, I'm like, okay, I'll just leave it for a couple of hours. I mean, Destiny went down PlayStation Network went down, so I couldn't get into Destiny. So I'm like, okay, just put a DVD on, sit here and watch, you know, Batman for a couple of hours or Naruto or something like that. And it's like, yeah, just sit here and watch something and play me Pokemon. And it's like, yeah, there's other stuff I can do. But, I mean, it's a pain in the ass for the developers, and they've got to, like, sort all this shit out, clear all the data. I mean, I don't know. I'm not technical when it comes to this. I can barely fucking run my show. But this sort of shit is really fucking annoying, and it's outdated. You know, there's no need to do this just to get a rise out of people. Yeah, it's going to fall back on you, and you're end up going to get in your throat cut. Because you know it's annoying. It's you shouldn't be doing stuff like this. It's 2014 for fuck's sake. People need to stop living in the old world where stuff fucking shit like this and prank phone calls are commonplace. It's outdated, petty bullshit, and you need to grow the fuck up and move the fuck on. It's really, really fucking childish. But yeah, I mean, it won't stop. Of course it won't, because there's always some little prick out there who wants to shut down servers and do all this sort of crap because they think it's a laugh. It's stupid, it's demeaning, and, you know, people will find you, and they'll beat your ass. Let's find something else to talk about. What else? Because I've got so much stuff to talk about. I've got a whole fucking page of bits and pieces. Okay, let's have a look. I'm trying to find something. Here we go. As I talk about Destiny a lot, this is from Games Radar as well. Why Destiny players are smarter than Bungie expected. Bungie has confirmed that it's considering the addition of matchmaking to Destiny's super challenging raids. To anyone that hasn't played Destiny or doesn't fully comprehend how tough the Vault of Glass is, I imagine the reaction is some variation of the noise duh. However, for those who actually tackled the game's first raid, which is only available for players of level 26 and above, which is me, I haven't bothered because I'll explain in a second. It may come as a surprise that Bungie is considering the idea of letting strangers team up together. After all, the Vault of Glass is a bastard hard and requires total coordination among no fewer than six players. However, I think it's a glorious testament to the way Bungie's players have been embracing the spirit of teamwork engendered by the game itself. For me, it comes as a little surprise, despite the fact that I work in the games industry and could easily populate a six-person raid based on the people I can physically see from the office desk. I can find myself increasingly seeking the comfort of strangers in Destiny. Hey, I love playing strikes with friends as much as the next person, but there's a wonderful feeling that comes with overcoming overwhelming odds with two completely unknowns, which, as I've done, not the raid, but the strikes... I've done a couple of those with a bunch of randoms, and there's a great feeling of, yes, I have no idea who the hell you are, where you're from, what language you speak, but we just beat the shit out of this boss and a whole bunch of his bitches, and it was really fun, and, you know, I can understand that feeling. The way the game has been designed and balanced allows three or potential six different players to coordinate perfectly to communicate through the language of shooting hundreds of aliens in the teeth. See, when I play strikes with strangers, and admittedly they're all from the Vanguard Strike playlist, yeah, same as everyone else, everyone understands their role within each combat scenario because they've been exposed to hours of Destiny previously. It's a wonderful balance system of problems versus solutions. And even teams of strangers know how to answer the question asked of them. That's something of a necessary in this game. It requires online play to even work. Okay, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Over the last week, the game has been forefronting two particular strikes, at least when I've been playing, the Devil's Lair and the Cerberus Vi 3. So I've been playing each one about four or five times in the last few days. Each time I play, my team of total strangers follows the same patterns and offer the same solution to scenarios thrown out by the game. The Devil Walker near the end of the Devil's Lair person. One person snipes from the centre, another deals damage from the top right of the map, which is where I hide. And a third controls the fallen minions over down the left flank. And there's no over-communication here, just an innate understanding of what seems to be done for a successful mission. But it's not all pre-scripted either. What impresses most is that how people react when things change, how they help each other over compensate when enemies overrun a flank or down a fellow guardian. Obviously, there are multiple ways to approach certain aspects of each strike too. Going back to Devil's Lair, I've seen successful fire teams stringently defend the laser grid area against three waves of Fallen Hive. I've seen successful teams fight to the spawn area, eliminating snipers, stealth units at the source. I've done that both times. In each instance, though, everyone on the team instantly knew how I fitted into the strategy. Do you revive fallen comrade, or persevere yourself for 30 seconds? It will take them to respawn. Again, without communications, people just know what works best. It's amazing. Which, you know, I will say, I mean, I was playing, because, you know, we got the new round of bounties this morning. I was doing the skirmish mission. It's like complete five skirmish maps. It's like, yeah, I've never played a skirmish match, but it's pretty much team deathmatch, but it's 3v3. And it's like, yeah, and you can revive people. And I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, as soon as I'm near someone, if I can get to them, I'll revive them. Or if I get gunned down and someone's near me, I will wait and they'll let them revive me. But some of the people I've played, I was one guy who literally took out two enemies that beat me and a guy I was with. And it's like, yeah, he ran off. I'm like, hello, we're here. You can revive us, you motherfucker. Why don't you revive us and then we can sort of find out where they're respawning and go and kill them and get some more points and get the, you know, get the one up on them. But no, he ran off and, you know, left us to respawn, which, you know, it was annoying, but, you know, it's all fun. While the Vault of Glass is a big step up from the basic strikes, the same principles apply. By giving enemies specific behaviours and showing players how Destiny's weapons interact with those foes, Bungie has given its devoted guardians the tools to learn. To team up and solve problems, beat levels with the very minimum of traditional communication. This is one of the game's best true beauties, and something you only truly understand when you've spent proper time playing, because it's knowledge gained through experience. So, to me, it comes a little surprise that Bungie is considering matchmaking for raids. It feels like a very natural step in It's a natural next step in the evolution of Destiny's flow of features. Give someone a car before they learn how to drive, and what you get is a wreck and some seriously bad automotive PR. Teach them how to use it, though, before handing over the keys, and the results are more positive. Yet, it's a metaphor for Destiny's raids, in case you haven't figured that out. People weren't prepared for raid matchmaking when the game first launched, and many are still likely to be unprepared. Given a few more weeks, and I think it'll be a great addition to the game. More than that, it's a nod in the respect for Bungie, its players, and who smartly embraced Destiny and made it on its own. Yeah, I agree. To be honest, 1 sec. Just need a quick drink. But yeah, I mean, I agree. But to be honest, though, everything in Destiny should have matchmaking, because I want to do every strike and mission. Blah blah blah. I want to do all of it, like the Nightfall stuff. But I have about 3 or 4 people on my friends list, and the Vault Glass needs 6 people. I mean, I've got Royce and Sean Hayes share a profile. I've got several other people. I've got Punchy in that, and I've got a couple of people I know who are on PlayStation. But yeah, trying to get all of us together to play Destiny, like to do Vault Glass or raids and stuff, it's not going to happen. As much as I like it to, it ain't going to fucking happen. With headsets and communication and that sort of stuff, it's just not going to work. But everything should be matchmaker, everything. Because, we are learning bits and pieces. We are learning to play together through non-communication. I mean, playing some multiplayer stuff today, for example, there was a person, I was sort of not camping, but I was literally, when I'd been shot, I'd sort of found a sort of safe area, and then hid away while maybe the enemy was coming towards me. So I sort of snuck to one side and hid away until that person came out, then sort of waited around the corner and then sort of just punched them in the head and, killed them that way. But I'm also, if there's like a guy behind me, I will stop do the whole bait stuff and turn the person who's just run past me and then follow him, be the bait for the person with the gun who's probably going to shoot him, and I can take out the other person and get the kill. But yeah, I mean, we all fully understand certain things. It's like, yeah, if I can revive you and I'm close to you, I will. I mean, been playing with Royce for a good few weeks now, and I will risk life and limb and getting, downing the whole party just to come, revive him and get him back to health. But yeah, I mean, it all depends on how you play. But to be honest, though, there is a sort of unspoken rule, because there is no communication between how we go about playing the multiplayer, how we go about playing the single player, how we do about raids, parties, all sorts of stuff. It's like, yeah, we pretty much know what to do. We know how tough these enemies are. We know to sort of where to go. But I mean, just say with the Devil's Lair mission, I don't really see too many people. I mean, I did have one couple of matches about a week or so ago where there was like one guy at the back sort of sniping, which, to be honest, that's nice. But the only actually chance you want to do the sniping is when you take out the Devil Walker, you go for its legs and you blow off one of the leg parts, and it sort of the heat drive pops out. You snipe that with a good sniper rifle, you're going to do some decent damage. I was doing like 1,300 damage on that thing with every shot from a four-clip sniper rifle. And yeah, it was doing tons and tons of damage. But it's literally, what you want is some sort of fast machine gun, auto rifle, scout rifle, pulse rifle. Go for the legs, take it out as quick as you can, because that's the weak point, and then have someone go for the heat block when that pops out. That's it, really. That's all you need to do. But so, yeah, recommend everyone going down the right-hand side of the map near the top. And it's a nice little area. You just got to be careful, because they can shoot you with missiles and all sorts of shit. But yeah, I agree. I mean, everything should be matchmaking, because I want to do all this stuff, but I don't want to do it on my own. It's like, yeah, we need more people. It's like, matchmaking should be a thing. It shouldn't limit to people. I mean, I don't see why you couldn't have matchmaking with everything. It doesn't make sense. It's, yes, I mean, I understand what he's going with this metaphor about the whole teacher fish with the cars and stuff. It's like, yeah, but they'll figure it out eventually. And people are putting a lot of time into this game. I'm putting a lot of time in this game. I've still got plenty more time to put into this game. And we want to do bits and pieces, but it's like, yeah, we want people to play with and playing with a bunch of randoms is so much easier than just playing with your friends, because with randoms, they're always going to be there. Well, your friends, when it comes to playing the games, they don't have time. It's like, yeah, because I mean, let's say I'm in England. Everyone else I know who's playing this is either in America. So there's like 5, 6, 7 hour time difference between all of them. And they've got work and other lives and stuff. And it's like, yep, I'm sort of sitting here about, 10 o'clock at night now. Could be playing Destiny. It's, 5 in the afternoon. People are at work. I've got to bed in a couple of hours. What the fuck, do I not play something today because they're all working? Or do I have to wait till the weekend when, they could have their own stuff? See, we all have busy lives. And matchmaking would make things so much easier when it comes to this sort of stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty much going to take a break now because I've read a whole bunch of articles and I've got a whole bunch more stuff to read through. But stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Well, if you do, get yourself a drink, get yourself something to eat. And I'll be back in about 8-9 minutes after these messages.
That combination. And Ashley, you're from England, so we're not really sure what asshole number you would be. We just know it would be at least 2 extra numbers and 1 extra dash.
Yeah,
that's all we know
sign.
For sure. Yeah. It's some sort of country code.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to have a go.
If you'd like to Skype in, it's Antisocial Gamer Radio. All one word.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
Now I'm realizing that this is all going to be on fucking podcast. Oh, boy.
I told you.
Yeah, we were trying. I was trying to warn you the whole time.
Dude, I don't care. I'm voluntarily Skyping into you. Use this to make a promo. I don't care. No. Mm-hmm. Dude, like I said, my fiance doesn't listen. Dutch got drunk one night. Well, he gets drunk every night. But he got drunk one night, and I used it as a promo. Why not? Use this into a promo. I give everyone permission to turn this audio into a promo. I don't care.
He also used Drunk Me for a promo, too, if you remember.
Punch AJ, it. You play it every week.
I do. Folks at home, Radio Gold like this happens every Sunday and Thursday at midnight on 360 on 420, only on MoreLikeRadio.com.
Hey, smokers, you stink worse than a dumpster. Stop living in the Middle Ages and try an electronic cigarette today by Smokeless Image. Just go to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke. They're cheaper than regular cigarettes, don't smell, and come in a variety of flavors like fruit, mint, and traditional tobacco flavors. Order your new electronic cigarettes from Smokeless Image today by going to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke. That's tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke.
Have you ever wanted something so bad that you do just about anything for it? Well, that's exactly how we feel about you. That's right. AdamandEve.com wants you so bad. We're giving you 10 free gifts with your first order. You heard me right. That's 10 free gifts to spice up your love life. First, you'll get a sexy surprise for her. Second, an adventurous toy for him. And third, a little something we know you'll both enjoy. Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD. And number 10, free shipping on your entire order. That's 10 free gifts for you shy types who've never tried Adam and Eve before. Just go to adamandeve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, a sexy piece of lingerie, or anything you desire. Just enter offer code DEAL48 at checkout, and you'll get all 10 free gifts, including free shipping. That's offer code DEAL48. That's DEAL48 at adamandeve.com.
If you're sick and tired of getting pro wrestling only after it's gone through the PG filter, then it's time you were introduced to Combat Zone Wrestling.
celebrating 15 years of ultra violence. Combat Zone Wrestling will give you all the high stakes, high flying, and hard hitting pro wrestling you can handle. Check out their live event schedule. Get information on their next iPay-per-view. Skim the roster or shop for CZW merch right now at CZWrestling.com. That's CZWrestling.com. No dance segments, no endless talk of downloading apps, just wrestling. Combat Zone Wrestling, the ultra violent underground.
Talk Radio Meltdown.
He just wrote a song, put it on an album. The album came out, went to number one, and a few weeks later, he's like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm gay, and if you want to know why, listen to this particular track.
Oh,
so everyone did, and they found out. It's like, oh, the song's apparently about how much he wants to fuck a dude. Okay. That's logical.
Well, with the verse like, I want a dick up my ass repeatedly with balls touching my bum.
Is that really the lyric? I'm not familiar with this band.
Talk Radio Meltdown every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on morelikeradio.com.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in. This is Mitch, producer of Dutch and Royce. I just wanted to take a quick moment to remind you why we are better than you.
I took the turkey baster and put it in the glass and sucked up as much pee as I could. I took the turkey baster, after lubricating it in my asshole, and put it up as far as I could in my asshole, and I was repeatedly thrusting it in and out while jacking off and screaming out a boy's name and moaning to make it feel like it was real.
I can't believe
this. I then imagined
Sean, did you write this?
I then imagined in my head him screaming, I'm coming! And I squeezed the turkey baster ball, shooting all my pee into my ass. I kept taking the turkey baster out and filling it with more pee and shooting it deep into my asshole, making it feel like it was a huge come.
Listen to Dutch and Royce live Tuesdays from 10 to midnight, only on morelikeradio.com.
What kind of store only has one thing on the shelf? T-Fury does. Now before you complain, listen to how it works. Each day a brand new t-shirt design becomes available for only 24 hours, then it's replaced by a new design the following day. They're all submitted by freelance artists too, so they're completely unique. They come in multiple colors and sizes, and they're all inspired by nerd and geek culture. And for only $11 per shirt, you can't go wrong. Check out today's limited edition design right now at tinyurl.com/MLRTs. Bookmark it and check back daily for new designs at tinyurl.com/MLRTEES.
Tonight at 10, it's a tale of lust, seduction, and murder on Sexy Betrayals. Then at 7, some like their murder with a side of sexy biscuits on Southern Fried Homicide. But now, get ready for Lust, Betrayal, and Murder on Hot Load Case Files.
Oh, yeah, three of the best shows in a row.
Is the lube over there?
Yeah, I got lube right here.
Well, get over here, big guy.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah, hi, we aren't getting our informative murder porn? No, none of our channels that have informative murder porn appear to be working. Yeah, the screen just says, how do you tame a horse in Minecraft? Yes, we do have children. A what? A parental lock? Stan! How do you tame a horse in Minecraft?
What?
What is Minecraft and how do you tame a horse in it?
You guys don't need to be watching that stuff.
Oh, come on! You can't block your parents from watching informative murder porn! What, you think if we watch shows about married people killing each other all the time, we're gonna go out and do it? That's stupid! I'm not gonna go out and kill your mom just because I watch Investigative Discovery, Stan. It'd be impossible to clear away all the DNA evidence anyway. Even if I hired someone else to kill her, I'd have to kill that person too, because 96% of the time, that person eventually tells the truth. I've thought this through a lot. Stan, you're a lousy kid. I wish Jaden Smith was my son.
And welcome back to part two of Antisocial Gamer Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. Yeah, as I said before the break, got more news articles. And this one's a bit of a downer. This is from Eurogamer. Nintendo to focus on Nintendo Direct and social media following Nintendo's... following the official Nintendo magazine closure. Which is a bit of a sad loss, because I used to read this years ago, before there was the internet. I'll read the article first, before I go into a little story. Nintendo will focus on the old Nintendo Direct broadcast. Social media channels and events to communicate with its customers following the now confirmed closure of the official Nintendo magazine. Nintendo is constantly evaluating and evolving the ways in which it speaks to its fans. Community spokesman told Eurogamer. With this in mind, Nintendo UK has decided to focus on alternative channels, including Nintendo Direct, social media and online channels, and public events. Publisher Future told the latest issue of the magazine would be its last. The decision marks the end of more than 20 years of official licensed Nintendo publications in the UK. Yeah, because literally there's nothing. I suppose there shouldn't be any gaming magazines, to be honest. It's, you know, hello, it's 2014. We have the internet. I mean, I haven't picked up a gaming magazine in, what, 3 or 4 years? I'm just trying to think now. Yeah, must be 3 or 4 years. I mean, I know I picked up a copy of, I think it was Game Informer. Was it Game Informer? No, one of the gaming magazines in America when I was out there visiting, when I was in Florida. I just picked one of them up. I'll carry on reading the article. The first to officially feature Nintendo's name was the Nintendo Magazine System, which debuted back in 92. No changes and changes of publisher. An official Nintendo magazine has remained a fixture of the UK newsagents' shelves the past two decades. The US equivalent Nintendo Power magazine, which closed itself by which was closed by Future at the end of 2012. Futures UK, an official magazine, Nintendo Gamer Informer, formerly NGamer, NGC, and Superplay, published its last issue back in 2012. Yeah, so basically, it's literally this. If Nintendo's, to be honest, it's understandable because Nintendo has fuck all in the games industry. I mean, they're big push in Super Smash Brothers, which people are enjoying and having fun with. But it's like, okay, that's all you've really got at the moment. There's a whole bunch of stuff coming out of the Wii U, but it's not enough for people to give a shit about the Wii U. I looked at the old Wii U's UK Facebook page. It's like it's 100,000 likes. It's not much, considering the other systems are like, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions, and, you know. But yeah, I mean, it is a sad loss, because I mean, I used to buy this, 15 years ago. Yeah, but this is, you know, back when, you know, I first started. Because I didn't have anything else, like when I first got my Game Boy. Speaking of Game Boy, I was at work the other day, and some bloke had, it was like driving in his car, and he had the classic original Game Boy, the big brick thing. Wow, it's been a long time since I've seen one of those. But yeah, I mean, you know, I used to buy this when I first got Pokemon for my Game Boy back in the day. And yeah, because they had, Nintendo did like tournaments and stuff. All across the country, so, you know, sort of regionals, not national tournament. It was like, you know, a regional thing. It was like to get a Mew and stuff like this. And it was Nintendo had the dates and stuff, and they organised part of it. And yeah, I used to read this all the damn time. It was really good. It's such a shame, but to be honest, it's the way of the world. It's print media is dead, and to be honest, reporting and all sorts of stuff is dead these days. I mean, I have no journalistic degrees or whatever, but I'm sitting here talking about games like I know a thing, which I do, to be honest. I know certain things, but yeah, I mean, the whole journalistic integrity is pretty much out the fucking window, to be honest. Here we go. What the fuck? No, sorry, one second. I did have something clicked and it just fucked up on me. Okie dokie. Nope, not that one. Not that one. Where are we? There we go. Thank you. Here we go. Yeah, this is from CVG. PlayStation Home was successful, says UK developer. Endream CEO claims that his company earned seven-figure sums annually. Soon to be closed, PlayStation Home service was not the failure some have deemed it, according to the CEO, one of its key contributors, Patrick O'Lanan. There we go. The boss of UK studio Endream says Home was extremely profitable for a number of years thanks to its dedicated following of gamers, all six of them. People say the Home was a commercial failure. He says in a blog written for Games Industry. But we generally we generated seven-figure revenues for several years from home, and other studios did as well. Try telling us that it wasn't successful. Well, it wasn't. I mean, yes, you made money, but no one fucking gave a shit about home apart from the few core people who actually used it. Here we go. The End Dreams was one of a number of studios dedicated to creating content and free to play games in the PlayStation home environment, and was best known for XI, the alternative reality game. No idea what it was because I haven't been on home for years, but seven figures, that's good. You made a million. Nice, guess. But the guy is saddened that Home will be closing in March 2015. This is not because Home is closing, but because Sony doesn't appear to appreciate what an incredible experiment PlayStation Home was, he says. Yeah, it was okay, but it was just... there was no really need for these hub world things. It was like, as I said, I'm bored and tired of all these, E3 and Expos and stuff. You don't need to put on these great big showy events when you can do what Nintendo's doing, which basically focus on like direct broadcasts and stuff like that. One, you'd save yourself a whole fucking lot of money. You're missing out. Us gamers are missing out on the core social aspect of getting together with other people and interacting and stuff. But we'll just spend our time sitting on our asses in our living rooms playing computer games with a bunch of randoms anyway. So what's the fucking point? We either do it in our own home or we get off our ass and go and do it in public. Sure there was many fundamental things wrong with the design of Home, but there was also so much that was right about it. Players love to spend money on virtual items. Yeah, there's nothing like buying something that's not even real. But above all, it was the passion, the loyalty generated by Home that would be long remembered by anyone involved with the platform. The community loved Home. Some people met on Home. They married in real life for several people that it was a refuge for the real world, a place where they felt safe and secure. Sony announced in late September that PlayStation Home will be shut down in March 2015. Players will not be able to download content past December 3rd. But to be honest, though, now that it's closing down, why would anyone bother downloading anything anyway? Although Sony plans to release a substantial amount of free content for the games prior to the closure. Home entered open beta in 2008 as a platform for PlayStation 3 owners to meet up and interact with customizable avatars. Also notable at the time were its living spaces, which players could decorate and upgrade. Though the service was initially positioned as an integral part of the PlayStation 3 experience, which plans as a dedicated trophy room to let players show off their progress in other games, Home largely served as a gathering place for its own community. Yeah. Home was fun for the people who enjoyed it, and if you actually bothered with it, but the times of loading and stuff was just more than I even wanted to play, and it's just a waste of time. It's just, when all we really want to do is just, load up our games, and, that's the thing. Where do we go? We either meet up in Home, or we just go on message boards and stuff. It's we either meet here or we meet there. Here we go, for people here in the UK and Europe. Sony launches games under £8 sale in Europe. Discount applied to 63 PlayStation and Vita games. Sony has kicked off a new European sale called Games Under £8. As the title suggests, each of the 63 and Vita and PS3 games included have been discounted to less than £8. All offers will be valid until October 15th, at which point the games will return to their standard price. So you've got about a week. For the Vita, you got Break Quest, Doctor Who, The Eternity Clock, Farming Simulator, a popular game of Ed Burns, Fort Defense, North Menace, Gravity Badgers, Guns, Slugs, Indoor Sports World, that sounds fun, Need for Speed Most Wanted, Rayman Origins, Brawl Boxing, Retro City Rampage, Ridge Racer Ultimate Edition, Lego Batman, Naruto, Sweet Fuse. For the PlayStation 3, you've got Back to the Future to Game. Really? I might have to get that, I think. Castle Crashers, which I recommend everyone get because it's fun. Command & Conquer Red Alert 3. Deus Ex Director's Cut, I recommend that as well. Dirt 3. Epic Mickey 2. Pixar's Cars 2. Dragon Age Origins. Dragon Age 2. Enslaved Journey to the West. I recommend everyone in Europe and UK or wherever the hell you are, Get that fucking game. It is awesome. Really good story. Really good character. It's about the whole relationship stuff that wasn't just sex. Between Trip and Monkey, a great relationship between those two characters. Play it. Awesome. You'll love it. Firmin's and Star Drone Bundle. Jurassic Park the Game. Just Cause 2. Lord of the Rings War of the North. Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3. Master Reboot. Mortal Kombat. NASCAR. Need for Speed Most Wanted. Ninny Cooney? You ready? I might have to get that. Nobby Boy, Pac-Man, Prototype, Rayman 3, Rayman Legends, Rayman Origin, Ridge Racer, Sonic, Sonic Adventure DX, Sonic Adventure 2, blah blah blah, Sonic stuff, more Sonic shit, Soul Calibur, Star Trek, Star Wars Force Unleashed 2, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Out of the Shadows, Tomb Raider, Toy Story 3, and Worms Ultimate Mayhem. Yeah, a whole bunch of good stuff, actually. I mean, I am thinking of, what the hell was it? Sorry, Nina Cooney, I might have to pick that up because that's supposed to be really, really good. And if it's under £8, I can afford that. It means I have to turn my PlayStation on, but yeah, should be pretty cool. What else we got? Let's have a look. Here we go. Yeah, this ain't from Microsoft. This is from Eurogamer. Microsoft dissatisfied with Xbox One's slow Japanese launch. Microsoft has said it's not satisfied with the Xbox One's slow start in Japan. The console has sold 30,000 units in the country after doing about 3 weeks on sale, less than half of what Xbox 360 managed in the opening weekend. It's not as though we're satisfied with the current sales state. Xbox Japan boss Takeshi Sanusi told Famitsu, "This is we hope to continue." Through taking user feedback and improving the Xbox One and offering content that everyone can enjoy. We also are aware that reaching out to let more people know about the Xbox One is vital. But Microsoft remains hopeful that the console may fare better over time, though how long this might take, Sanusi doesn't say. The current console generation has become very long. We hope to lay out a long-term vision and to focus on publicity for our console. Taking the first step was very important as for how to permeate the market from here. We hope to continue to do our best. Xbox One reached up to 256,674 units during the first week. Wow, first few days on sale in Japan, and then just wow, shit, 3,015 units until the following weeks. Last week it sold 1,314 units, barely tipping over the 30,000 market total. Wow. Put this in perspective, the Xbox 360 sold 62,000 units on its first 2 days. The original Xbox managed 123. Yeah, wow. That's really going back. In 2002, that was. Japan's general decline of interest in console is likely part of the problem, but the PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, Wii U are still outselling the Xbox One by a huge margin. 2-1 for the PlayStation 3, 8-1 for the Wii U and PS4. Microsoft has a long fight. I've said it. Well, you know, Japan doesn't hates America when it comes to this sort of shit. And the fact is, they're all mobile gamers now. I mean, I'm hearing lots of stuff that basically it's, you know, 3DSs, phones. Yeah, it's gaming on the move. And, you know, Japan isn't the biggest country in the world, so, you know, small houses and stuff like that. They're not going to want big, open, giant things where you can bounce around using Kinect, because fucking nobody wants to use the Kinect. But yeah, I mean, it's all mobile stuff these days. Pokemon, Monster Hunter, which I'm trying to get into. But yeah, it's just so much mobile gaming stuff. Yes, the Wii U and the PlayStation 4 are selling well, but they're not selling that well in Japan, even though they're Japanese companies. It's all mobile stuff, really. It's been nice to think this is a trend or a sign of things to come, but I don't know, really. I mean, joined to see where the games industry is going in Japan, because maybe it's a testament to where we will be within 10-15 years. Japan has a healthier lifestyle than the rest of the world. We're all big fat motherfuckers. I mean, I'm exercising as much as I can, and, you know, Americans aren't known for being super skinny. The way the world, really. Everyone's out and about, whereas we're all indoors, sitting on our asses, as I said, playing fucking Destiny and whatever the fuck we can get our hands on. It might pick up, but I mean, Josh, if I think with Japan, I mean, the best thing would be for Microsoft to launch a mobile console, some sort of unit. I mean, I know that the PSP isn't the PS Vita rather isn't doing as well as the PSP did, but even the PSP was shit and the Vita's doing shit. But even in Japan, it's a mobile device. Maybe Nintendo makes something. Maybe Microsoft makes something exclusively to Japan for a little while until things get better. I don't know. We'll wait and see. Here we go. Yeah, something I saw that's quite interesting. This is from GameSpot. Crytek says it's getting increasingly difficult to wow people with graphics. The consoles are clearly behind high-spec GPUs in terms of raw horsepower. Rise Son of Rome developer Crytek. Crytek is known for some of its best-looking games in the industry. Oh, interjection quickly. A lot of the Aliens Isolation reviews I've seen, they've been sort of, saying about the gameplay and whatever's going on, have been sort of bad-ish. But the graphics I've seen from the game is amazing. The detail on the buildings, the space station and all the items. Lots of detail in the old character models and bits and pieces, but it's just the game that lacks. They put a lot more into, the aesthetics, like the buildings, stuff like that. But yeah, I'll carry on reading this article. The first Far Cry and Crysis were ahead of the technological curve when they came out. However, the developer says that it's not as easy to impress players with beautiful graphics as it used to be. As opposed to the times of the original Crysis, we as an industry have reached a quality level now where it gets incredibly more difficult to really wow people. Crytek's principal rendering engineer, Nicholas Schultz, told DSO Gaming in an interview that said, "There's still enough areas to explore and we definitely keep pushing the boundaries as much as possible." Schultz also discussed the limitations of high-end PC graphics, processing units, GPUs, and the current generation of consoles. On PC, he said the current generation of high-end GPUs is still far from being able to reach 60 frames per second at a 4K resolution, which is four times the amount of pixels that need to be shaded compared to the 1080p. This is very quickly saturating the available bandwidth, Schultz said. The consoles are clearly behind high-spec GPUs in terms of raw horsepower. However, on the positive side, they share the same modern architecture which enables a wealth of interesting optimizational techniques. I mean, I agree. I mean, I've said this for a while. We are going to reach a limit. Is that a quick drink? Oh, sorry, I think I got a cold or something. But we are going to reach that limit of, graphics. I mean, I said this when I did the whole evolution of gaming's topics about a year or so back. We are going to reach that wall where graphics can't get any better. So you're going to have to basically be okay with how good the graphics are. I mean, the graphics look amazing. Like I said, Aliens Isolation, the alien looks pretty good, and the whole space station, that sort of stuff, looks amazing, really detailed. But to be honest, there's only so far you can push the graphics. It's up to where you push the gameplay. I mean, when we get to that big giant wall where you can't push the gameplay, graphics, or anything else any further, that's when basically gaming needs a big overhaul. And what do we do then? I mean, that could be a future topic for me. That could be. Graphics only go so far, but, there are other things that you can push. But if you're hitting the spec on the graphics in the world, the way your games these days, then you're pretty much, on top of where things are, really. Here we go. Something from Star Wars The Old Republic. Star Wars The Old Republic expansion, this is from Eurogamer, Shadow of Revan announced. During December, subscriber pre-orders get 12 times the experience boost prior to launch. Wow, 12 times. Star Wars The Old Republic is getting a brand new expansion on the 9th of December, entitled Shadow of Revan. The story's based add-on will revolve around Revan, a former hero of the Jedi Civil War who has gone who has gone rogue and formed his own army. Priced at just under $20. The expansion will include 5 new stages, an increased level cap of 60, and an all-new multiplayer flashpoints and operations challenges. Those who pre-order prior to the 2nd of November will receive 1 week early access to Shadow of Revan starting 2nd of December. The digital expansion, Rise of the Hutt Cartel, and an exclusive grand statue of Revan will be displayed in their player's stronghold. While the early access offers expired after the 2nd of November, the other pre-order goodies are available till the 1st of December. An extra subscription exclusive perk is that if you pre-order Shadow of Revan prior to the 2nd of November, then they'll receive a 12 times experience boost through class story missions up to level 55 until the 1st of December. So I'm guessing that's good. I'd actually like to know more about this. I mean, I love the Star Wars The Old Republic. First one. The second one was okay. It wasn't that good. But yeah, I mean, yeah, the whole thing with Revan is pretty cool. You know, what happened after the original Knights of the Old Republic? You know, because you were Revan. Spoilers. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to finding out more bits and pieces about this. Here's some stuff about the crew. The crew release date set for December. Ubisoft upcoming open world race of the crew is now due to release worldwide on the 2nd of December for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, and Xbox 360. Yeah, here we go. Sorry, the crew was originally set for an 11th of November release, but you know these things go better late and polished than early and unfinished. excuse me. And on the other plus side, there will be a second closed console beta for the crew sometime in November, making it the fourth beta test overall since the first two were PC exclusive. So that's pretty cool. I might have to get myself involved in that because this game looks interesting. It really does. We received a lot of valuable information about the recent PC and console betas. And creative director Julian Geraghty on the Ubisoft blog says, we are now scrutinizing all the player feedback so we can ensure that the crew delivers and seamlessly the seamless open world experience that meets everyone's high expectations. This player feedback from the betas has convinced Ubisoft to tweak the enemy AI, adjust the difficulty, enhance video chat, and add the option to remove the HUD. Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I mean, the crew and Drive Club. You know, trust. I probably couldn't tell the difference between either one, but both look interesting. And you know, with Drive Club, the crew, Forza Horizons 2. You know, it's pretty much which racing game do you pick? Really, I mean, you just sort of set them up. One, it's like you know, one against the other. Here we go. Yeah, Star Citizen, a game I'm looking forward to watching other people play because I know I won't be playing it myself. As Star Citizen hits 55 million, Chris Roberts insists all money goes back into development. Ongoing sales related to in-development PC space game Star Citizen has pushed revenues through the 50. What the fuck is wrong with me? I don't know. Through the 55 million mark. Developer Cloud Imperium Games has revealed in a blog post on the Robert Space Industries website, CIG Chief Chris Roberts said Star Citizen had now held the Guinness World Record for the longest crowdfunding project of any kind ever, considering the crowdfunding stuff has only been going for a few years. Well, Kickstarter stuff and that. Star Citizen continues to generate impressive revenue off the back of the sales of spaceships from its official store, as well as the arrival of new players. I sometimes get asked why I continue to raise money, Robert said. Haven't you already got raised enough to make the game? The answer is that Star Citizen isn't a normal game. It's not being developed like a normal game, and it's not being funded like a normal game. I've had to toss aside a lot of my knowledge from the old ways of developing and embrace a completely new world. There is no publisher. There is no venture capitalist wanting a massive return in 3 years. There is no need to cram the game onto a disc and hope we get it all right. Star Citizen is a type of game that players will play for a few weeks, then put on a shell. It's not the game type of game that players will put on for a few weeks and then put on a shell to gather dust. Instead of building a game in secrecy, we can now be fully open with you as a community who have made this game possible. We can involve the future player base in the creative feedback loop as we develop and iterate core systems. As a group, we are all involved and united in our quest to make the best game possible. Robert insisted that all the money made by the game ahead of the launch is being spent on development, which it should be, to be honest. And it's fine. So when it comes to this, because this game looks amazing, it really does. And you know, everyone who's planning to play this, good luck to you. I hope you have a lot of fun with it. But yeah, I mean, as I say, there is no publisher. So basically, they need all the money they can get to make this massive game and to put it out there. So you know, the more money they have, the more detail they can put, time, effort, that sort of stuff, all goes towards making a better and better game. Every effort is about enhancing the game's vision, he said. Funding to date has allowed us to go so far beyond what I thought was possible back in 2012. You're still getting the game, no question, but it will be all the richer and so much more immersive because of the additional funding. More than 280 people are working on Star Citizen in studios in the US and the UK. CIG keeps a healthy cash reserve so that if the funding stops tomorrow, the developer will still be able to deliver the game. I now look at our monthly fundraising and use that to set the amount of resources being used in the game to develop this game. Meanwhile, CIG released version 0.91 of the Arena Commander Dogfight module. This adds customizable key briefings so players can customize their controls as they see fit. Also, backers now select which ships appear in their hangars. Lucky bastards, I swear. This game looks really fun and really, really enjoyable when it will come out. Let's keep going. There's about 20 minutes left to try and get as much information to you lot as possible. Here we go. Assassin's Creed Unity. This is from CVG. Assassin's Creed Unity in 60p, 30 frames per second on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. And there's an update here. Ubisoft didn't lower the specs to account for any one system over the other. Assassin's Creed Unity will render the at 90p resolution and run at 30 frames per second on both PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Senior producer Vincent Pontebrand has revealed. He told videogamer.com that the team decided to lock them at the same specs to avoid all the debates and stuff. Which, you know, it's good. Because, you know, you'll get fighting. It's like, well, this looks better on this system. You know, as it usually does. I mean, we get all the websites come out with, like, crossover gameplay. It's like, yeah, which game was, does this look better in PlayStation, your Xbox, or your PC? You know, all that sort of stuff. He explained that the game could run at 100 frames a second if it was just graphics, but not while managing the detailed AI process that simulates the game's massive crowds. And the individual citizens. Exactly. I mean, this game looks amazing. You know, what's going on with all the people and stuff like that? You know, it takes a lot of power and, you know, you limit your graphics and bits and pieces, but it still looks amazing. So stop worrying. We were quickly bottlenecked by that, and it was a bit frustrating because we thought there was going to be a tenfold improvement over everything else AI-wise, and we realized it was going to be pretty hard. Pontebrand said it's not the number of polygons that affect the frame rates. An update on this is Ubisoft, in a statement issued to Kotaku, said that it didn't lower the game specs on any of the platforms to account for the other. The company spokesman said, "We understand how senior producer Vincent Pontebrand's quotes have been misinterpreted. To set the record straight, we did not lower the specs for Assassin's Creed Unity to account for any other system. Assassin's Creed Unity has been engineered from the ground up for the next generation consoles. Over the past 4 years, we have created Assassin's Creed Unity to attain a tremendous level of quality that we have not achieved on the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PC. It's a process of building up towards our goals and not scaling down. And we're proud to say that we have reached the goals. We have reached those goals on all the SKUs. At no point did we decide to reduce the ambitions of any SKU. All benefits from the full dedication of all of our available operational resources to help reach the goal. Reach the level of quality we have today with the Assassin's Creed Unity experience." Original story continues. Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag also ran at 90p, 30 frames per second on both systems when it launched last year. However, a post-launch update bumped the PlayStation 4 versions resolutions up to 1080p. So, are we going to see a bump? Maybe. Don't know. But yeah, I mean, the game looks good. You're going to have a lot of fun with it. customizable stuff. There's so much stuff. I mean, she was, with games these days, as I said, with the Crytek article, we don't really notice the graphics that much. So, you know, we're going to get what we're going to get, and we're going to fucking like it, really. You know. Okay, let's find some more articles for you. Let's have a... Here we go. Dead Rising movies, plot, cast, detailed. This is from CBG. Digital release focuses. Digital release can focus on fans, director says. The upcoming Dead Rising film, which will take place between the events of Dead Rising 2 and Dead Rising 3 in a new city called... director Zach Lipovitsky... has revealed. The filmmaker, who is best known for directing Leprechaun Origins... Yay, what a pile of shit. And appearing as one of the 16 contestants on Steven Spielberg's On the Lot television show. I haven't heard of it either. Told Slash Film that the franchise brings a lot of new energy to the genre that we haven't seen in a zombie movie. Lipovitsky said the idea that infecting people can remain living as long as they take their medicine is very interesting and dramatic, as in a concept that each outbreak occurs in quarantined are living their lives to continue as normal somewhere else. That said, the film will match the game's lighter tone. It's definitely got its dark, scary beats, but unfortunately it's an adventure film. Lipovitsky scared. Every time I get scared or laugh when playing, I make a note to add it to the script. Tonally, it will be like Indiana Jones with zombies. Fun, scary, and dramatic action. And hopefully not with Shia LaBeouf. The picture will start... Oh, are you fucking shitting me? Jesse Metcalf, are you fucking shitting me? Best known for his role in John Tucker Must Die. Yes, that's Oscar-winning movie. And Desperate Housewives. That's awful pile of shit. TV show. Megan Aury, Virginia Madsen, Dennis Haysbert, and Keegan Connor. Tracy, also a peeler. Never heard of any of them. Dead Rising will initially release on Sony's Crackle... Ah, here we go. On Crackle service, which offers viewers free ad-supported video content in North America. The film will then be distributed worldwide as both single feature and an episodic series, depending on the platform. Yeah, so it's a film, but it's not a cinema film. So people will watch it, maybe. You know, it's going to be another reason why... you can't make movies from games, mainly because it stars Jesse Metcalf, but the director that makes fuck all, and starring a bunch of fucking nobodies that people couldn't give a shit about. But if it's good, I'll be happy to watch it. But I'll wait for some reviews from other people first. Just what I want. I want more fucking Mortal Kombat Legacy, please, because that was, you know, the last one. The season 2 came out 2 years ago now. I want more of that. That'd be great. Lipovitsky said the digital exclusive release means it can aim to please Dead Rising fans more than the big budget blockbuster could. Well, it's not that. It's the fact that you're a fucking nobody doing making a film about a game which doesn't go well, even though it's a great game. But a bunch of nobodies. So the budget's going to be okay. So they say, the more money you spend, the greater the audience you have to please. The film is being made for the fans, and that's possibly because it's a digital feature. It's being shot in Vancouver with the help of the Vancouver Capcom team that made games. So I'm a fan of the game, and I'm excited how much of the world we're able to cram into it. That's good. I'm glad he's excited, but I'm not. And I know this is going to be a pile of dog shit, so... we'll wait and see, and, you know... I don't know. I'm not too fussed about this, to be honest. It's probably going to be really, really shit. Here we go. Watch Dogs sequel will push more emergent stories. Profiler system may expand, original games creative director says. Watch Dogs creative director Jonathan Morin wants the game's profiler system to help craft better emergent stories in a sequel. I've got an idea, but I'll read this article first. Morin told Digital Spy that the mechanic, which gives players a brief background check of Chicago's inhabitants, can help players embrace more of the fantasies of becoming a vigilante. Players may be inclined to steal from the wealthy lobbyists, but help out down-and-luck single parents, for instance, even though both are just randomly assigned traits. Yeah, that'd be good. I mean, if it sort of broke down and helps, if it had, like, you know, the good or evil thing with it, and, you know, changed how the game worked, if, you know, how the city developed and how the people developed, you know, gone like that. So, like, if you did the whole Robin Hood, stole from the rich, gave to the poor, would there be a money increase? Would there be a better aspect of, you know, it's all about how the game world and the mechanics and the money system and, you know, how would the in-game money direct? I mean, it's sort of like the MMO stuff with, like, WoW and the merchants' banks and, you know, stuff like that. It's hard to explain, but yeah, it's sort of would we see more of the players wearing, you know, say suits and nice outfits if, you know, we took some money from the rich, gave to the poor to sort of level up the sort of, you know, level of quality of life, possibly, if that's the way to describe it. But okay, I'm reading it, which is we have a huge opportunity to have something that's quite unique here. And the way you can pass it, if you want, systemic contextual narrative in the world, Morin said. You can humanize the people around you. That I definitely see as the beginning of something that is quite unique and could push the industry forward. Despite the push, Morin said that the team must be cautious not to overly tailor the results of the profiler and consequently reduce players' room for interpretation. So that's pretty much out of state of much our state of mind now, to make sure we can explore fully the possibilities before we start pretending we know what we're doing, he noted. Ubisoft's Montreal Vice President of Creative told CVG in September that the film has ambitious plans for the Watch Dogs' future. So we're getting a Dead Rising movie that we don't want, and we're getting a Watch Dog movie that we don't want. So, yay, game movies that we don't want. Yay, I guess. Fucking waste of time. Here we go. Yeah, it's GTA 5 on PlayStation 4 install is 50 gigabytes, allegedly indicates. Wow, that's a hell of a lot. Claims to support Move motion controls. Good luck with that. excuse me. GTA 5 will require a 50 gigabyte install on PlayStation 4, according to a list which allegedly appeared on the PlayStation Store. A GTA forums user captured an image of the page which specifies a 50 gigabyte minimum save size that would make it one of the new console generation's biggest games in terms of size as well as anticipation, taking up more than a tenth of the PlayStation 4's storage. PlayStation 4's system default storage. Which shouldn't be a problem for me because I delete old stuff anyway, as I don't need it. The listing also indicates the game will support some motion elements, saying that a PlayStation Move navigational controller or wireless controller will require for motion control features. A previously alleged leak indicates that the next-gen GTA 5 will add an additional first-person mode in both vehicles and on foot, which would be interesting, really would. I mean, you get a first-person mode in vehicles anyway. But if it's like behind the wheel, that'd be nice. That'd make it more fun, more interactive, a more sort of realistic experience. The GTA 5 release date for PlayStation 4 Xbox One is November 18th. PC version of the game, which really expected to debut alongside the next-gen console versions, will be released in January 27th of 2015. Basically increased draw distance, high resolution. Rockstar says players can expect numerous improvements, including denser traffic, a new foliage system, enhanced damage, weather effects, more radio stations with 100 additional songs and DJ mixes. So we're getting a whole lot more for this game. I think I'll probably pick this up. I mean, I know it's coming out early November, but I think with this I'll probably wait till, I don't know, mid-December, probably. Get around Christmas time, you know, spend all day playing on Christmas Day playing with it. This will probably be my last topic because I'm running out of time. This is from CVG. The divisional divisions social PvP areas detailed. Won't run into a non-groups players while doing missions. Divisions players will be able to socialize in one central hub and battle one another in designated PvP zones. A GameSpot preview posted this week detailed how players in the online shooters will interact with each other. I love that. They can't write to say they're fucking dicks. The blend of social and single-player content resembles Destiny's system in broad strokes. Much of the details differ in practice. Outside the division's main social zone, players who are not in your group will only appear in dark zones. The dark zones offer a more unstructured PvP dynamic system than the Destiny's Crucible matches, game director Ryan Barnard explained. You could be in a group in a dark zone. You'd be very aware when you're in a dark zone, and that's single player. You could also come across them also in a dark zone and decide to engage if you want. But if you won't randomly run into them while you're doing missions, when you're in the bases... When you're doing missions or base operations. In another preview, Barnard said that the game's narrative will feature a few milestones that players must participate in before they can participate in future missions, which means it will mean splitting up some groups that have progressed unevenly. Yeah, so basically, if you haven't done this, you can't access it. Simple as that. When you're doing a narrative story, you have moments that you want every player to experience, and we have those in the division as well, Barnard said. In May, Ubisoft delayed Division from its original 2014 launch window to 2015. It's set to release on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One next year, which is something I'm looking forward to. I know Matty wants to get this and the Solo Y, so we'll be picking this up and playing together. But yeah, Division, one of my games for next year. I can't wait. I'm so glad, to be honest, because there's so much stuff coming out at the end of this year, and I don't have time for all of it, because there is so much stuff coming out. I mean, there's like three or four games that I want to pick up at the end of the year. Eight. There's a lot of games that I want to buy by the end of this year, but it's just going to be a long wait ahead of me, to be honest. But yeah, this is pretty much the end of the show. There's no alcohol by volume tonight, but there is a best of. So have a listen to that if you're listening in the chat room. My time now is on as after the hit. And then you have Dutch and Royce finishing out the night on Tuesdays. A whole powerhouse of shows that you should listen to as soon as they go up for download. And pretty much the same as any night, tune in live to all the live shows on Morlock Radio. Get involved, join the chat room. So I go live 9 PM UK time, 4 PM Eastern, every Tuesdays. Don't forget as well, if you want to call in the show, it's Antisocial Gamer Radio. Just add that to your Skype contacts. Also, if you want to go to morlockradio.com, get all the details, but I'm going to say all my details now. Go to antisocial game. If you want to email us, it's antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. If you want to join the Facebook group, it's facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. Also, join like us on Facebook. Trying to get to 200 by the end of this year would be nice. Facebook.com/antisocialgameradio. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at MLRGamerRadio. But yes, also go on iTunes, leave us a review. I'd appreciate that. 5 stars. Send me a message about, that you've reviewed it. I will look it up and I will read it out on the show. I'm not too sure what I'm talking about next week. If you do want to, meet to talk about something that I haven't talked about before, get in touch with email me, message me on Twitter, find me on Facebook, get in the Facebook group, find the Facebook page, get on there, have a listen, to the show. Tell me what you think. Tell me what you want to talk about. Interact with all of us on Morlock Radio, find the Morlock Radio Facebook page, follow them on Twitter. A whole bunch of shows worth listening to. We cover pretty much everything here at Morlock Radio. Gaming, comedy, music, drinking, and more drinking. Wrestling, pretty much anything you can think of that you're interested in, there's a show for it on Morlock Radio. But yeah, I'm going to go now and have a drink and cough my lungs out, get rid of this bloody cold that I've got. But yeah, I'll be back next week. Usual time, usual place, with the usual shit that you're listening to. And I will see you then. Have a good week, people, and keep playing some games. See you soon. Bye.
Fucking Ashley brought anything to the table?
My God, yeah, what a sure. Bag of burden that British piece of shit was. Holy
a
shit.
A woman can pilot.
From everyone here at BBC Radio 4, this is Alice Arnold, hoping that you sleep well and wishing you a very good night. Good night.
The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking north at Sierra, south at Sierra, south or southwest, or northwest, or northeast or east. Occasional rain, wintry showers, occasional rain, rain or showers, occasional rain, moderate or poor, becoming moderate.